tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Yes, tune in right now. We having a party.
We got the disco lights.
And we got disco lights. I feel like I need to get up and do a Soul Train line. Hey, y'all. This is your girl, Carla Renata, a.k.a. The Curvy Critic. You have joined us at Black Hollywood Live for episode 101 of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. And my guest host, Miss Angelique Jackson, is back.
I am so thrilled to be back. Congratulations again on 100 shows.
Girl,
that is amazing.
Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
I'm just like, what have happened? The time went so freaking fast. It really did. How was your Oscars? Let's just talk about this. How was your Oscars week? Because, girl, I saw your post. You were everywhere.
I had such a busy Oscars week, and I'm so...
And you broke out the ponytail for
me today, too. Yes, we are living our best, you know, diva life. Thank you. It'll be here for one more week. But it was awesome, because at the end of the day, the Oscars ended up with a glorious surprise with Parasite cleaning up, basically. After, you know, it had kind of been the same thing, same old, except for at SAG Awards when they won. It made it all feel really exciting and worth it that, you know, we got to see America discover Bong Joon-ho and discover Parasite, and you even saw it at the box office this week. They upped the theaters, and they had like a 200+% box office jump, which is the highest ever.
Which is funny to me, amazing. Because they were all up in the news tomorrow. Oh, it was the lowest rated Oscars ever. I feel like they'd be hating on women, because this particular Oscar ceremony was produced by two women. One of them is Stephanie Elaine Bray, who used to be an executive at Paramount Pictures. Yeah. Excuse me, and is, you know, responsible for us knowing John Singleton. So I just feel like whenever women are at the helm of something, they always hate. Like they did that with Birds of Prey. They do it with Ghostbusters. They just hate whenever it's a bunch of women. I'm not having that.
I really can't with the Birds of Prey part of it. But no, but the thing about the lower ratings, it's like, first of all, people are not watching TV the same way. So it is not super surprising that the ratings went down again, because also there's no host. And I think that's going to be a real question going into next year. While, like, yes, the show moved well and it was good, like, maybe they do need to reconsider having a host. Maybe that will bring people back to it. Look, I don't know what's going to bring people back to watching.
They're not going to reconsider it, because that's going to put a dent in their pocketbook. So there's that.
That's true. Money. Money is a big factor.
Money is the root of all evil, honey. There's that big old pocketbook of theirs. And they're like, no, maybe not. Maybe we're not going to do that. But we'll see. But I totally agree with you. But my Oscars week was hella busy. I did some stuff for... I did some stuff for... I co-hosted the Emily's List brunch. I did some NAACP stuff. I felt like I was everywhere. I was sick of seeing myself.
No, but and that's the part. It's like, it's really fun, but it is also very tiring. And actually, realistically, award season isn't technically over yet, because we still have NAACP Image Awards.
I know.
But
that's
up
like,
this weekend.
That's the last thing, though. And Then we're done. And that's coming up next weekend, but we'll talk about that toward the end. But I wanted to talk to you and introduce this man that I love. So his name is Harry Lennix. A lot of people watching or listening might know Harry Lennix from The Five Heartbeats, which is like my favorite movie ever, because I talk about it here all the time. Talk about Robert Townsend all the time. But today I'm going to talk about Harry Lennix. Harry Lennix is on this show called The Blacklist, or Blacklist, on NBC. And I spoke with him. He's a classically trained actor. And I spoke with him about a new cinematic piece that he has called Henry IV Parts 1 and 2 that he shot a little while ago that has Heavy D in it. So lets you know how long ago it was. Heavy D was in it, because Heavy D's no longer with us. But I spoke to him about that. I spoke to him about Shakespeare. He talks about Dion Cole. He talks about Messiah. He talks about Bad Boys for Life. You know, it's a plethora.
Wide ranging.
It's a plethora of things that we discuss. But I'm going to go ahead and play that interview, and then we'll finish chatting when we come back. As I'm watching, I notice I see Heavy D. What did it take for you to wrangle him into doing the classics?
I always loved Heavy D. And we were in rehearsals for H4. My buddy Avery O. Williams brought him by the rehearsal. I seized the day. I was like, come on, man, you got to be in this. And he agreed. He was my pal. You know, we worked on it. You know, I went over to his apartment, worked on the material once or twice before he actually shot. And then, of course, as you know, before the movie came out, he passed away. But he was a great guy. guy, and I think he does a lovely job in the film. It may be one of his last, if not last, performances on film. We're grateful to have had him.
I loved him as an actor. I was really sad that we didn't get to see more from him, because I thought he was really exceptional.
I agree.
So there's a famous line from this particular piece, "Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown." How do you think that that analogy is applicable, especially for the American people today with our state of affairs and an impending civil war? Because, you know, today we vote on, not we, but our representatives vote on whether or not to impeach our president.
Yes. You know, the great thing about Shakespeare is that it's always relevant. None of it really goes out of date. Whoever happens to be wearing the crown, or in this case, we wanted to make it look like the guy is kind of a quasi-religious leader as well as a political leader. If you look at the burdens of power, I think it's referred to as public service for a reason. You're at the service, really, of not just your constituents, it seems, but of fate itself. I don't know anybody that is entirely sane or well-balanced that wants to be leading affairs of state. Who wants that job, really? So I think that it's always true, not just in the case of our present situation with Trump and so forth, and the impeachment, which seems to be mostly political, but that's the price you pay. It's a political office. It's a political environment and world, and people, when they are doing that, when they are applying politics, when they are in politics, you know, we wanted to make a deliberate point, Carla, that stagecraft, statecraft, and H4 are the same. If you look closely at the movie, you'll see that all of the stuff that takes place that deals with politics or kingdom or the kingship or royalty takes place on a stage in a theater. You know, like even when Hotspur and Kate are, they're talking in a dressing room. But if you look at Henry, he's always on a stage. Whenever you have that position, whenever you're wearing the crown, I think that you are performing. That's not easy either.
No, it really isn't. When I was made aware of H4, the first thing that came to mind was there was a movie that Oprah Winfrey did, The Women of Brewster Place. And in that film, Leon and Robin Givens' character, they perform Shakespeare for the neighborhood to make it relevant for the kids of that generation. Because Shakespeare, for people of color sometimes, is a little daunting, and especially for little kids. They're like, what is he saying? What does that mean? So when I heard about this project, that immediately came to my mind. So with Henry IV, we're doing this new, fresh take for this generation, right? With it being set in L.A. Why L.A.? Why not New York or Chicago?
There are very practical reasons for that. The idea, the actors, everybody, we were out there in L.A., all of us were L.A. actors. And I think a lot of times New York and other places get credit for Shakespeare and theater. But there's a great amount of theater that happens in Los Angeles, California, state of California in general. So you could literally make a living just doing plays up and down the 101. Anyway, you want to. You know, you might not get rich. You can certainly make a living. That said, you know, we were out there. We thought there was a natural parallel wood in England, that sort of thing. It sort of lent itself easily to the tongue. I think also we really did is not change the play so much as the setting of the play. Those are Shakespeare's words. And we wanted, as you point out, you know, to make it seem contemporary, to make it seem relatable. You know, the idea of Shakespeare is relevant and importance, I think, is again, just like the themes of burden, power, uneasy lies that had, and so forth. It's also true that those relationships between people remain the same, so we really didn't have to change the words. But we thought that, just like you mentioned Brewster Place and what Leon and Robert Givens were doing, for people to be able to see themselves in the play, in the world, it only helps. These are important plays. They're beautifully written. They tell an interesting version of history in England. But why would that be important to people of America, particularly people who are black and in schools and public schools reading these plays? Why would it be important unless they can see how it relates to them? And I think that all of those plays, if we're going to continue to study them, could use a kind of fresh coat of paint, so to speak, in terms of its production, not the words. Words are great. Stories are great. But I think that new approach is long overdue. And I'm proud that we were able to be the first on board, so to speak, in terms of taking an English history play, placing it in a contemporary, recognizable time and place, but also do honor to the words and the story. We didn't change any of the dramatic action. We didn't change many of the words, a pronoun or two here and there, place name here or there. Those are the words. And we think that it's difficult to improve on Shakespeare. I've never found it to be the case, Kyle. I promise you, I've done a lot of this kind of work.
But you know, a lot of people, and you know this is true, a lot of people, when they hear Shakespeare, they mentally just kind of tap out because they're like, yeah, I gotta think too hard to watch this or understand this. So I'm really appreciative of the fact that you have put yourself up on the mantle to reconfigure these classics and make them relevant for a whole new audience that wouldn't normally pay attention to it or be interested in it. So for that, thank you. What is your favorite classic?
In terms of just affection for the play, I love Julius Caesar. It's always interesting. It's a really interesting play. It's so well written. The characters are so well drawn. The language is so beautiful, like those funeral oration speeches, the friend Roman's countryman speech. You know, I can hear that 1,000 times or read it 1,000 times. So that's my favorite.
And just as a fun, light question, because we've been talking about such heavy, deep subjects this morning at the crack in L.A. What, if anything, are you streaming right now?
Well, I streamed a show on Netflix called Messiah, which is very interesting, limited series. I don't know if it's coming back or not, but that's a very interesting show.
Do you watch anything that's just like straight up funny? You such a serious...
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about funny, but I love, you know, I watch sports.
I said, do you watch anything funny? You're like, yeah, I watch sports.
That's very funny. I watched the Chappelle special, Sticks and Stones. I watched the did something recently. Deion Cole. Yeah, that was funny.
Okay.
Yeah, I just saw Bad Boys for Life. That was awesome. Very funny.
It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. I love interviewing you. I really do.
Good talking to you again.
All right, take care. Have a great one.
Okay, you too.
You guys, I love the when I asked Harry Lennox, what do you watch that's just straight up funny? He's like, I watch sports.
Like, what?
I was like, really, Harry Lennox sports? He had to laugh at himself. But I just wanted to preface before we continue to talk and say that I did this interview. It was the morning of the impeachment impeachment vote, I should say. Mm-hmm. So that's why we were talking about the impeachment and everything. And it took me a minute to get it up, because it was award season and I just got behind. So
yes.
Mr. Lennox, I apologize, but it is up. I hope you enjoyed how I cut our little conversation together, and I look forward to the day where you are here in person and we are not talking on a telephone.
Because yes.
I think you are the bomb.com. You know this. I love you to death. So there's that.
I love that.
For anybody that's just joining us in the chat room or whatever, this is The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata at Black Hollywood Live. If this is your first time joining us, please give me a big old thumbs up to let me know you were here on YouTube. Go over to Spotify, Apple Music, and anything else that streams podcasts. You will find me there. And thank you again for joining us. We always talk about news, reviews. I have people join me, like Angelique comes in, and she's like my homegirl. Like we here. Jasmine Simpkins was here last week. She came and hang out with me. I love y'all. Were like, so you want me? So Can I come and hang out with you at the show? I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's okay to do it by myself, but it's so much more fun when I have somebody to talk to. I'm like, hey. And then, of course, in the chat room, I got to shout out my regulars. We got Brandon up in there, Cup of Soul Show, Katia, Jenna James is in the house. So welcome, y'all, and thank you for joining us. I appreciate you. Brandon's like, he said he was surprised that Hair Love and Toy Story 1, because he loves both of those films. And he liked Claws, too, which was also nominated.
Yes.
Yeah, I was over the moon about Hair Love.
I mean, for me, that was one of the locks going in. Like, if that did not win, that would have been one of the biggest surprises of the night.
I was going to feel some kind of way if it didn't
win.
I really
also.
Was. I was going to feel some kind of way if it didn't win. Because I talked about it here all the time. And
yes.
I told Peter Ramsey, the producer who won the Oscar for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I told Matthew Cherry, who now is an Oscar winner for Hair Love, I'm like, I told Matthew early on last summer, I'm like, you know I'm your good luck charm, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm interviewing you, you're going to win the Oscar. So when they won, I was like, I'm just saying, I told you I was a good luck charm and you got an Oscar. I'm just saying. And then Peter Ramsey hit me back. He was like, yep, always trust the curvy critic. I'm like, yeah, Peter Ramsey endorse a sister.
Oh, I can't wait to see what you predict for 2021.
Ooh, ooh,
who's going to get that endorsement?
Ooh, we shall have to sit back and see, shall we?
Yeah, don't give it up too early. That's the thing. It's only February.
I know. So let's talk about what's in the theaters and what's coming. So Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yes.
This was a film that I really thought was going to be going, you know, I'm not surprised that it didn't because of what happened with the female filmmakers.
Yes.
But this was a film that I really thought was going to get some love this award season. It's a beautiful LGBTQ love story between two women. It's a French love story. It's directed by Celine Sciamma. It's a Neon Pictures. And I'm hoping that what Neon did for some other films this year is going to do for A Portrait of a Lady on Fire, because it seems to be having like a resurgence.
So, yeah, they did a limited release kind of to be eligible for a lot of the early awards. Mm-hmm. And then they had their wide release here this weekend mm-hmm. for February 14th. And what's great about Portrait of a Lady on Fire is that, yes, it's been up and has gotten some awards. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. not as much as I think we all thought it was going to receive.
Absolutely.
But it still has the César Awards, the French Academy Awards,
so maybe
at the end of the
that.
Month. I feel like they're going to do real well up there. I mean, and it should, because it's a beautiful film. I think Neon also had Parasite this year. And I think a lot of what we learned about award season is that a lot of these companies only have so much budget. And they can really only put their marketing money behind one film or a couple
Which
of films.
Which that makes me sad. Because back in the day, like when Paramount was king in Hollywood, they had several films that would be up for Academy Awards. Like The Sting, The Godfather, they would have big blockbusters going at each other, and they equally put their weight behind it. So I find it so interesting now that they feel like, oh, we got to do this one or this one. It's almost like making a bet, because they don't really know which one is going to hit.
And it's also because, like, when you were talking about with Paramount mm-hmm. has a lot more money than someone like Neon or A24, and a lot of them more, like, award season movies have tended to be these smaller studios versus our big, you know, our big studios are focused on their blockbusters, and they normally have like a couple, right? You know, of other awards.
Right.
But yeah, they just don't have the money, and it's really
it makes
kind
me
of unfortunate.
So sad. It makes me so sad. So sad. So you guys, this movie, it stars these two women, Adele Hanel, yes, and Naomi Merlant.
I'm really bad at pronunciations, okay. But I think you're at least close.
Well, I'm at least close, so forgive me if I have butchered y'all's names. That is not my intent, but what I will not butcher is talking about your fantabulous performances. Yes. I have never seen a story done so eloquently and done so beautifully involving a love story between two women. It was gorgeously shot, gorgeously directed. I can't say enough about it.
It's so romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really expecting that. I had no idea what the film was going to be. I knew it had won the Queer Palm at Cannes. And, you know, I kept hearing all these raves. And everyone was just like, you know, so obsessed with this movie. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. You know, of course, it is subtitled. It is in French. And that also kind of adds to the beauty of it. Like, everything about it, this 18th century, the beautiful fabrics and their clothes and just the way they're, you know, I don't know. It's just a very romantic film.
It is. And right on time for Valentine's Day, actually, really.
Exactly.
It was right on time for that. So that's Portrait of a Lady on Fire in theaters right now. Produced by Neon and directed by Celine Sciamma. So this film, I know you haven't had a chance to see it yet, Emma.
I'm so jealous of her, guys.
Emma is a Focus Features joint. You know, Focus Features is my home. And it's another adaptation of the 1800s Jane Austen joint, which actually, now you may or may not know this, Emma actually is the impetus and the inspiration behind the film Clueless.
Yes.
With Alicia Silverstone.
Yes.
So, you know, and Stacey Dash. And that was a huge, huge, huge hit. But the impetus for that film was an adaptation of Emma. And Emma is just like this meddling, like she means her friends well, but she just like throws her friends under the bus in 1800 style. And it is pure comedy at best. And it is pure unadulterated joy, as is its leading lady, Anna Taylor-Joy. And shout out to Anna Taylor-Joy, because when I tweeted that about her on Twitter, she retweeted it and liked it. So thank you, Miss Anna, because you were the bomb.com in that movie.
She really is so incredible. I mean, when you think about, like, I think the first time that I really was like, oh my gosh, she's insane, was in Split. She's so good in those movies, in Glass and Split, and joining that whole like trilogy, and those eyes, her eyes,
her face is just, she's beautiful. Like, she is just, she looks like a little porcelain doll come to life. She's gorgeous. But aside from her beauty, that girl got some acting chops. Mm-hmm. She acts her behind off, and she is crushing it in Emma. So y'all, Emma is coming to... No, Emma's in theaters right now. It's in theaters right now. Oh, another one for Valentine's Day.
And you can also watch the Gwyneth Paltrow version.
Yeah, you can watch the Gwyneth Paltrow. There's, like, look, there's three other versions of it. So you can watch every other version that
so
there is.
So just watch them all. Like, really have, you like, can, a full Austin you can have, weekend.
You can have an Emma movie weekend, and then you can go after watching all the Emmas and then go watch Clueless.
Yes, exactly. You've got to, if you're going to watch it, you've got to really watch it in all its forms.
Yeah, and then you got to watch Clueless because it's just pure comedy, how they've taken this period piece and turned it into something contemporary. So that's in theaters right now, and it's directed by Autumn Wilde, and it's adapted by Eleanor Catton. And I just love that this is a film directed by women, adapted by women, starring women, and it just can't get any better than that. You know, I'm always talking about either, you know, somebody that's Latin, Asian, Black, or some women over here at the Curvy Critics. So
I mean,
that.
Somebody's got to, and we are happy to do it because it's important.
It is important. It's important to bring those voices up and lift them up. So the next one is, okay, so I talked about this before, how Disney, how the mouse ate the fox.
Oh.
The mouse ate the fox.
And dang, that's good.
The mouse ate the fox, and they have rebranded 20th Century Fox and Fox Searchlight Pictures into Searchlight Pictures and Fox Studios.
20th Century Studios.
20th Century Studios, my bad. 20th Century Studios and Searchlight Pictures. So that's what they are now.
Yes.
So under the new umbrella of Searchlight Pictures, we now have a film that's out called The Call of the Wild. And it stars Harrison Ford and Omar Sy. Or C.
C.
Okay, yeah. Omar C., who's a brother, and I was very excited because I interviewed him, and he was lovely. But y'all will
so
get
lovely.
Y'all will get that next week.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see your interview.
It's pure comedy because I, you know me, I have no sense. So I said some stuff that is just so wrong, and he was like, "She's crazy."
But I love
her. But I'm just gonna roll with it. but it's about this dog. It centers around this dog, and you know. Y'all, I'm always a sucker for movies that involve dogs and Same. Babies, talking dogs and babies. But this dog doesn't talk with his mouth, but he talks with his eyes.
Yes, and I have a dog at home that does that. So it was very emotional trying to watch this movie.
Look, I boo-hooed buckets. I boo-hooed because, you know, I lost my dog nearly a year ago. And my dog was very much like Buck. The dog's name in the movie is Buck. And Buck is one of these dogs that just non-verbally communicates what he wants you to know. And if you speak Buck,
then you're good.
Then you're good to go. But Harrison Ford is starring in the movie, but the movie really is about Buck. It's not about Harrison Ford's character. Harrison Ford is almost like a supporting character in this, so to speak. But the journey that this dog goes on to discover who he really is at heart as a dog, it's a beautifully crafted story, and I enjoyed it very much. I really did.
So you and I saw The Art of Racing in the Rain near each other as well, and we also like Boo-hoo. Met up in the hallway and we're like, oh,
a mess.
My whole face is so falling off.
The Art of Racing in the Rain and this, just the buckets.
But something really cool about The Call of the Wild, too, is that to create Buck and to make Buck really emote and be so interesting, they actually used a motion capture artist named Terry Notary, who has done like Planet of the Apes and a lot of those films. And he was actually acting opposite Harrison Ford. So he's in his motion capture suit, you know, crouched like a dog, sitting next to Harrison. And they both talked a lot about how that really helped inform that relationship. So it wasn't just so much, you know, he's acting against a tennis ball like you see a lot of times when, you know, people are in these special effects movies. And I think it really did. It really brought something special to this, you know, big, lovely dog and the way that he, you know, kind of emotes and the way that he communicates. And I don't know, for someone who's, you know, 77 like Harrison is, I'm sure it's a lot nicer to get to do that and like really have a real performance, kind of like theater, than it is to do, you know, totally CGI all the time.
And the other thing about this movie, bringing up Harrison Ford, is the fact that this is the first time in a really long time we've seen Harrison Ford not be a romantic lead, not look his handsome, scruffy. He's scruffy, but not in a handsome, scruffy way.
I don't know what you were watching, because...
okay, whatever, Angelique. But to see him be vulnerable in a different aging kind of way. We haven't seen him in a role where he is embracing he's 77, I believe. Yeah. So it's really nice to see him in a role where he's embracing his age and he's not trying to be something younger or hold on to his past glory. Like, he ain't trying to hold on to Indiana Jones or, you know, Han Solo. He's just embracing where he is. And I love Harrison Ford as an actor. He's just, he's, he's, he's a legend, and he's one of the OGs. And, you know, I don't care what he's in. I'm just going to go see it, and I'm going to rave about it whether it sucked or not. So.
But this one did not suck. It really did not. When I walked out of it, and I talked to a number of journalists who also saw it at the same time, and we were all just
were all crying.
Oh, yeah. It was really nice.
Yeah, we were all crying. So, you guys, it's going to be released on 2/21, February 21st. Again, it's Searchlight Pictures, and it's directed by Chris Sanders. So there's this other film that was like, at Sundance, everybody was talking about it. It was called Premature. And everybody, did you see Premature? Did you see Premature? No, I didn't see Premature. But what I saw it recently because I have an interview coming up with the director, Rashad Ernesto Green. And this film is a coming, it's a really beautiful African-American coming-of-age story that is like a cross between The Girl on the IRT and like Love Jones.
Yeah.
Like, it's got very similar scenes to Love Jones. It's a beautiful story. And it centers around this girl. And it's co-written by the girl who plays the lead, Zora.
Mm-hmm.
And it centers on relationships, on the complexity of relationships between a black man and a black woman at their youngest, purest form. Right? Yeah. So this dude is messing around with this other girl, and he's trying to have this thing over here with this chick, and then she thinks she might be pregnant. Like, it's a whole lot going on, and her girls are going in on her, and it's just, the way that it's told is hilariously funny. It has New York as the backdrop. Like, New York is like a secondary character, so you see them riding on the train and the shenanigans that happen on the subway. You know, when you ride on the train in New York, in Manhattan, it takes place in Harlem, USA, so which is funny because the Harlem, USA depicted in the film is not the Harlem, USA that exists right now because it's very gentrified right now. But I just really enjoyed the film, and I enjoyed the fact that this young brother wrote it. And it's centered on these young lives in this coming-of-age moment where they're trying to figure out who they are, how they belong in the world, and how they belong to each other. Like, you know, if you're going to embrace your girls or if you're going to kick your girls to the curb for a man and vice versa. So it was interesting. And there's this one moment. It kind of reminds me, there was this one moment that kind of reminded me, like, that scene from Grease where they're doing... Summer Lovin', where it's the bunch of guys are over here and the bunch of girls are over here. And it's very much that. You can see the influences of a lot of different filmmakers, like the filmmaking. The lovemaking scene in the film is very reminiscent of the way Spike Lee shot in She's Gotta Have It.
Okay.
You see all of these iconic black cinematic film legends, you see their influences on Rashad in the film. And so that actually made me smile and made me happy to know that there's a whole new generation that is embracing these different styles of filmmaking and finding a way to mesh them together and make it their own.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that.
I can't wait to see that. And I love that New York is getting so much love, especially from black filmmakers right now. Also at Sundance, we had the 40-year-old version. Mm-hmm. We've had the Photograph in theaters right now. There's so many...
Oh my god,
I love it so
much. I can't even talk about that.
I know you already talked about it, but I wasn't here. I needed to bring it up.
Oh, girl, go ahead, do your thing.
I'm just saying. Issa and
Lakeith. She had to put her head down. She was like, oh.
It is so sexy. That movie is...
Look.
It's...
I know Lakeith got a girl, but that I was like, look, Lakeith. I'm gonna need you.
And it's like... I loved the storytelling, the way that it bounces back and forth between this cross-generational story.
It's like The Notebook.
Yeah.
Remember The Notebook?
It is a lot like The Notebook. You know what? I hadn't even made that connection until
right now.
It's like a
black version of The Notebook, but in a sexy, funny, current, modern way.
Because
The Notebook wrecked my nerves when it came out. And whenever it comes on TV, I'm like this watching Ryan Gosling.
Every time. Oh, is Lakeith having his Ryan Gosling moment? Oh, that is all I could want.
Look.
That is actually all I could want for him. That would be amazing.
Look. Michael B is like, it's an FX dog. Yes, we know it's an FX dog, Michael B, but it's still a dog.
It still made me really emotional. And I mean, what was I going to do? Just see the movie, y'all.
Right,
You'll get emotional too.
Exactly.
Call me after.
This is the thing about cinema. I love any type of film that when I walk out of it, I felt something.
Yes.
If I walk out of that theater and I'm like, ooh, that was 2 hours of a waste of my time, that's not necessarily a good thing. So FX Dog or not, or Special Effects Dog or not, I felt something when I walked up out of there, and to the point where I had to take my mama to see it. It's just so cute. Yeah. I can't stand it. But
Had you read the book?
Because I hadn't read the book.
Me either. And I know people got taught it in school, and I'm like,
what school did I go
to? Exactly. But most people I know hadn't read it. So I'm very curious to know if anybody has already read The Call of the Wild. I'm kind of glad I didn't know what was going to happen, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to make a difference whether people read the book or not, because it just, the way the story is told will put you right there, you know, and this is showing, and that's the other thing, that movie shows Black people in a time, in a time period where we don't usually see Black people. On, like, the dude who's running the sled is a Black dude,
yes,
and his girlfriend is Asian, and I'm just like, yeah.
No, that was, you know what I mean? That really, I really loved that.
I really love that. Okay, so Premature is in theaters now. It's on the 21st. Call of the Wild is on the 21st. Emma is in theaters now, and Portrait of a Lady on Fire is in theaters now. So I need for y'all to go check out all of that. And then Harry Lennox's film, H4, which stands for Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2, is streaming online right now via Vudu, Google, any of those streaming services that stream films. You can find H4 there. Please support a brother. He does really good work, and his take on the classics and reconfiguring them for a contemporary audience is everything. So I need y'all to check that out. So let's talk about a little news. Oh, I'm sorry, to the sound person.
She ready to talk about some news.
I'm ready to get in. So Josh got this cool, like jazzy, kind of like, you know, hey, music whenever I do the news. All right. Which I think is pure comedy, and I'm there for all of it. So first thing is, No Time to Die is dying because it's not playing China because of the coronavirus.
This is actually a really interesting thing that's going to be happening for the foreseeable future with films, and what that's going to do to films' worldwide box office not being able to play in China, and also not being able to market these films in China because the actors will not be going there. It's really going to be interesting when you see things also like Fast and Furious 9 come out. Which,
yes, because that has a huge international audience.
Yeah. So I'm sure there's some stress from a lot of these studios, but at the same time, what are you going to do? Like,
there's nothing they can do.
So you just have to look at the box office numbers and remember that China's not going to be involved. So these numbers are going to be a lot smaller than they could have been.
It was supposed to play in Beijing, and so that has been canceled. I also want to point out, you know, every week I always talk about somebody who may have lost their life, and I'm so sad to report this one. This one really breaks my heart. There was a movie that Disney produced a few years ago called The Queen of Katwe, and the young lady who played the younger version of the young lady who was played in the older version by Lupita Nyong'o, her name was Nikita Pearl Walagwa, and that movie was in 2016. She passed away with a brain tumor at the age of 15. That makes me so sad. So incredibly sad.
It's really horrible news. Yeah.
She was initially diagnosed with the tumor in 2016, and her film family, which was Lupita Nyong'o, David Oyelowo, and some other people, they rallied around her to get her treatment in India. She made a recovery in 2017, but the tumor returned last year and took her life this year. So I wanted to acknowledge her young but brief life, because she made a splash here on Earth while she was here. So rest in peace, my sister. Ava DuVernay just went through a bidding war for her film, her Nipsey Russell documentary.
No big deal.
I know, right? And so the winner was what? Da, 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 da. Netflix.
Shocker. So in the least surprising news of the day, Netflix spent a lot of money on a movie. And honestly, quite honestly, I mean, congrats to them. It's, I'm sure, going to be a great success. Netflix was a great home for When They See Us.
Yes.
And they really promoted the heck out of that.
Yeah, so why
series.
Would she not go there? She,
exactly.
I mean, you know, she trusts them.
Exactly.
She trusts them. They've done her right. So, you know, I would have been like, yeah, sorry, y'all, but Netflix gonna take this one. And then last but not least, so Porgy and Bess is going to be adapted for the big screen. George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess is going to be adapted for the big screen by Dee Reese. My girl. I love me some Dee Reese, baby. Dee Reese is the person behind Pariah. Mudbound. She's behind Mudbound. I cannot wait to see what she's going to do with Porgy and Bess. Now, you know, snobby musical theater fans have already gone on social media and let it be known that they're not happy about it. But I say
give we don't care.
I say give a sister a chance because, you know, she's really good. She's another female filmmaker that is an African-American woman that is a wonderful storyteller. And if you have not seen Pariah or Mudbound, please make your way to a Netflix or whatever streaming service you got to get to watch those two films by her, because I'm telling you right now, the girl is no joke. Oh, she also did, she also wrote and directed the Queen Latifah. Oh God, what was that? Ma Rainey. She did the Ma Rainey thing on Netflix with Queen Latifah. So I'm just saying, she didn't did Ma Rainey, she didn't did Mudbound, and she didn't did Pariah. Pariah got mad love for Kim Wayans. The Ma Rainey thing, I think Queen Latifah even won an award for that, didn't she?
I'm pretty sure she did, but I can't remember if it was like an Emmy or
I think she won a Golden Globe or an Emmy for that. And then Mudbound, Mary J. Blige got an Oscar nomination. So I'm saying, the girl know what she doing. So don't hate on her sister. I'm just saying. And that is it for the Curvy Critic News.
That went too fast.
I know. It wasn't a lot of news this week. You know, because the Oscars, people was just like, look, I'm tired.
Yes, that actually is exactly what happened. How did you know?
Folk were like, look, I need a breather. I need to sit down. And next week ain't going to be no better because next week we got the American Black Film Festival Awards coming up. And then right behind that, the very next day, is the NAACP Image Awards. So I'm like, okay.
Y'all, we got a real busy week ahead. But it's great because it's also Black History Month.
It is
Black History Month. And we are celebrating.
We are celebrating our people. Yes. And, you know, as we know, February is the shortest month out of the whole calendar. So we got to, like,
But we got a leap year this year, so we have extra day.
We do have extra day.
Yep.
But we got to get it in. Yeah, I heard that bell. You are so funny. He went, ding. We got to get it in. It's like that bell that, whenever Josh does that, it reminds me of that bell that they have on The View.
Yes.
When somebody makes a good point, they go, ding. Makes me holla. Holla, holla, holla. I think that's it. So, yeah, next week we'll be talking about the American Black Film Festival Awards, the NAACP Image Awards. I'll have my interview with Omar C. from The Call of the Wild so that y'all can laugh and tee-hee-hee-hee about that. The Whistler's review and a review on Burden. I actually saw Burden at the Sundance Film Festival, not this year, but last year. So I'm surprised it took it so long to get distributed. It was supposed to be distributed last year, and some funky stuff went down. So hopefully I'll get a chance to talk to somebody from there and find out what happened with that. But, you know.
Yeah, because that's the thing about festival films, especially if they don't get purchased right away, that may affect their distribution schedule, or it may be a situation where they're like, oh, this year's really strong, we need to put you in next year so that you have a better chance. You know, it's weird, and I kind of always forget about that. Like, we see these movies at these festivals, and we're like, oh, it'll be out next week, and then it's
we
not.
Assume that it is. So I always tell the audience here that, you know, because they'll ask me in the chat room, they're like, so where can we see this? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that, Brandon. Pixar's Onward will be out. I'll be talking about that, too. Sorry.
I'm very excited. Thank you, Brandon. Have you seen that one already?
I have not.
Okay.
I will see it this week.
Same.
You know, my audience child, they will let me know. They're like, Diva, you forgot this movie. I'm not mad at y'all. But you're right. I tell them all the time that a lot of these films get distribution right away, and some of them, it takes a minute, but I always try to let them know. I remember Michael B. was asking me a while ago, him and Marlon Wallace in the chat room were always asking me about this film with Apple TV that was supposed to come out, The Banker. The Banker is finally going to come out. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for y'all to see that. I saw that, and it was fantabulous. So I'll let y'all know when the exact release date is for that. It's coming up in a couple of months. It's not anytime soon, but they are going to release it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when that finally hits theaters. Angelique, girl, the time flies when you come here.
I'm so thank you. Thank you so much for having me back.
You are always welcome here. Wow. Anytime.
Well, we have lots of movies to talk about for all of 2020, so
we will definitely
be coming back.
Yes, girl. I'll be trying to get her up in here, y'all, at least once a month. I try to work it out where she's here at least once a month. It don't always work.
Well, thank y'all for having me, too. It's so much fun, you know, getting to interact with everybody in the chat room, too.
They love you.
Makes it.
See, Michael B. just asked me, any news about Sam Jackson movie? I just said The Banker is coming out. I'm going to tell you. He's like, okay, great.
Well, he also has another one, by the way, because we also finally got the trailer for, oh gosh, what's it called? The one with Chris Rock that is in the Saw universe.
Oh.
Which, it's going to be very hard for me to watch that because I don't like any sort of scary movies, but I'm very curious about how this film is going to go.
Yeah, I don't like scary movies.
There's lots of, like, really interesting things online.
I might have to check
this
that out.
This is Josh in the booth, and name of the movie is Spiral.
Spiral. Thank you, Josh. Yes. Yes, we had to get sing-songy about it because we appreciate you. but yes, I'm really looking forward to, like, finding out more about this one because... Yeah, it seems like it's such a departure for both of them. It seems really interesting.
Yeah, well, I'll go with you because I'm like, But anyway, until the next time you join us, Angelique, where can they find you, my sister?
So you can find me at Variety on Twitter and Instagram, and then my personal handle at Ange814 on Instagram and Angelique814 on Twitter. And yes, all of my interviews and all of that will be there. You can find and actually follow along as I'm on the red carpet on Saturday at the NAACP Image Awards. So, you know, send me your questions and hopefully I'll get to ask them to the stars.
And to piggyback on that, I also will be at the NAACP Image Awards on the carpet working for the NAACP. So I'll be there at that. I'm supposed to be working the carpet for the ABFF, the American Black Film Festival, so you might see me there at that. And as usual, y'all can always catch me here every Sunday doing the Curvy Critic with Carla Renata at Black Hollywood Live. Right after this, I will be over at AfterBuzz TV doing the after show for General Hospital with my boy Frank Moran. But until the next time, thank you, Miss Angelique Jackson, for joining me from Variety. And y'all, I love y'all. Thank you for joining me once again. I will see you next week. And we got some awards to talk about and lots of movies to talk about then. So until the next time, love, peace, and hair grease. And I will see you on the flip side.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.